Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing Squish Lamps and Performax Drill Bit Sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Paris, 1949. A 41-year-old woman sits at her desk, surrounded by notes and manuscripts. Simone de Beauvoir is finishing the concluding chapter of a book that will scandalize and galvanize society. In a few months, The Second Sex will be published, declaring, "One is not born, but rather becomes woman." Beauvoir puts down her pen, anxious and exhilarated. She knows she's detonating a bomb under the patriarchy. Challenging millennia of assumptions about women's role and essence. As it turns out, the explosion of debate and progress that follows will mark her as a founding mother of feminism's second wave. Simone de Beauvoir was born in 1908 into a bourgeois Parisian family. Her father was a traditionalist who once ruefully said, "Simone thinks like a man," noticing her fierce intellect. Beauvoir was indeed precocious and very independent-minded. After World War I, her family lost much of its wealth, but they still prioritized a good education for Simone. Deeply religious as a child, Beauvoir experienced a loss of faith in adolescence and thereafter declared herself an atheist, but one with a strong sense of ethical drive. Beauvoir studied philosophy at the Sorbonne, where in 1929, she became the youngest person and only woman that year to pass the aggregation in philosophy, coming second in the nation. The person who came first was Jean-Paul Sartre. Thus began one of the most famous intellectual partnerships and unconventional love stories of the 20th century. Sartre was short, lazy-eyed, and charismatic. Beauvoir was serious, insightful, and equally charismatic in her own right. They formed a pact. They would be essential lovers to each other, what Sartre called a necessary love, but each could have contingent affairs on the side. They never married. Never had children, and maintained largely separate residences, but their lives and thoughts were entwined. Beauvoir taught high school for years, like Sartre, and began writing. During World War II, she and Sartre were part of the resistance circles. Beauvoir wrote her first major novel, She Came to Stay, 1943, which explores existential themes of freedom and the complexities of a ménage à trois. Drawing on an actual episode where Sartre and Beauvoir both were involved with one of Beauvoir's female students, a controversial aspect of their life. It was after the war that Beauvoir truly came into her own voice as a philosopher and feminist. She had seen how women remained oppressed and secondary in society, despite their contributions. She was determined to analyze the situation of women, not just in France, but universally. Beauvoir absorbed Sartre's existentialism, but took it in a new direction. She believed in the existential tenet that existence precedes essence. Applied to women, this meant that no biological or eternal feminine nature dictates what a woman is. Rather, society and upbringing shape women into the roles they fulfill. In 1949, she published The Second Sex, a monumental two-volume work that is part philosophy, part history, part sociology, and part memoir. In it, Beauvoir famously declared, "One is not born, but rather becomes woman." By this she meant that the traits associated with femininity are not innate, they are imposed by culture. She dissected how from childhood girls are taught to be passive, to act pretty, to internalize the idea that the man is the default, the subject, and woman is the other, the second sex, defined always in relation to men, not as autonomous beings. Beauvoir pored through history, mythology, biology, psychology, literature, to understand how women came to be relegated to the immanent, home, child-rearing, personal sphere, while men engaged in the transcendent, public, creative, world-building sphere. She argued that throughout history, men have made women the other, an object or second-class being, to reinforce their own absolute subjecthood. She did not deny the physical differences between the sexes, but she argued these differences are given meaning by society. For instance, she discussed how pregnancy or menstruation have been used to paint women as mysterious or weakened, thus excluding them from leadership. But she also imagined a future where technology might minimize these burdens, or where society might accommodate them so they are not impediments. The second sex was radical. It cast aside all the sentimental pedestal placing of women as the eternal feminine. Beauvoir had scorn for such clichés. Instead, it called for women to break free of their conditioning, to become equal partners in transcending and creating the world. Beauvoir extolled women who pursue careers, create art, engage in politics, any project that asserts their subjectivity and transcendence. She also identified how hard it is to break free. Women had often colluded in their own subjugation because it was comfortable to rely on men rather than claim risky freedom. She used existential terms to discuss the temptations of bad faith for women too. The backlash in 1949 France was immediate. The book was deemed scandalous. The Vatican put it on the index of forbidden books. Beauvoir discussed female sexuality, lesbianism, abortion, even a somewhat empathetic view of prostitutes. Nothing was off topic. Many men were outraged or mocked it, but it struck a chord, especially as it was translated and spread internationally in the 1950s and 60s, when the women's liberation movements, second wave feminism, rose in the late 60s. Beauvoir was hailed as a pioneer. Younger feminists like Betty Friedan, whose 1963 The Feminine Mystique echoes Beauvoir's critique of the stifling housewife role, built on Beauvoir's analysis. Beauvoir herself continued to be active in various causes. She traveled widely, wrote more novels and essays, including on aging, The Coming of Age, 1970, a study on society's treatment of the elderly, and was a public intellectual in the Sartrean mold. In 1971, she signed the famous Manifesto of the 343, a petition by prominent French women declaring they had illegal abortions, essentially outing themselves to demand legalization of abortion. It was a risky act of civil disobedience. Beauvoir, at 63, put her name first on the list, demonstrating solidarity across generations for women's bodily autonomy. Abortion was legalized in France in 1975, due in part to such bold activism. Beauvoir and Sartre remained close until Sartre's death in 1980. Beauvoir took care of him in his last illness, and later published letters and an account of his final years, Adieu, A Farewell to Sartre, 1981. She died in 1986 and is buried with Sartre in Paris, symbolically side by side in death as they were in life, with an epitaph honoring both. Simone de Beauvoir's impact is enormous in both feminism and philosophy. The Second Sex is often regarded as the foundational text of modern feminism. It gave feminists a framework. The concept of woman as other became a key idea to articulate how society marginalizes any group by defining them in relation to a dominant group. The concept has been applied to race, colonial subjects, etc., as well as women. Her famous line, "One is not born, but rather becomes woman," stands as a succinct summary of gender socialization, essentially anticipating what later feminists like Judith Butler would expand upon. Butler's idea of gender as performative echoes Beauvoir's ideas, albeit from a postmodern angle. Many of Beauvoir's observations, like how girls are handed dolls to prepare them for motherhood, or how women find their social identity through husbands, remain relevant to analyzing gender roles today, even if specifics have changed. Beauvoir's insistence on women embracing freedom and responsibility also aligned with existentialism's general message of choosing one's essence through actions. She extended that philosophical existentialism into a lived ethics specifically addressing women's situation. In philosophy, there's been increased recognition of Beauvoir as a philosopher independent of Sartre. For years, she was often seen as nearly Sartre's disciple or interpreter. But scholarship has shown that, especially in ethics and feminist theory, Beauvoir had original insights. For example, her concept of an ethics of ambiguity, from a 1947 essay, stressed that although we live without pre-given meaning, we still must treat others as ends in themselves, Kantian echo, acknowledging both our shared freedom and the constraints that context imposes, an approach to ethics that many find more human and situational than rigid moral codes. Beauvoir's novels, like The Mandarins, which won the prestigious Prix Goncourt in 1954, also tackled existential and feminist themes, exploring the post-war French left and the tension between political engagement and personal life, and including strong female characters striving for independence. Her candid writings about sexuality and female desire were ahead of her time. She didn't shy from acknowledging women as sexual subjects, a departure from the norm of glossing over female pleasure or homosexuality. This frankness helped destigmatize discussions of women's sexual agency. Critics of Beauvoir have pointed out her blind spots. For instance, The Second Sex focuses mostly on white, European, middle-class women's experiences. Later intersectional feminists have noted she didn't deeply analyze how race or class complicate womanhood. Also, some have critiqued Beauvoir's portrayal of motherhood as a trap. She could be seen as undervaluing women who choose domestic life, though one could argue Beauvoir's target was the lack of choice, not the act of mothering itself, which she felt society forced women into. Nonetheless, nearly every feminist movement after her owes a debt to Beauvoir's articulation that women's oppression isn't a fate, but a condition that can be changed. Betty Friedan, Germaine Greer, Kate Millett, all acknowledged Beauvoir's influence. And more broadly, her idea that gender is socially constructed has seeped into mainstream thinking. Terms like gender roles and critiques of stereotypes trace back to her insight that femininity and masculinity are culturally imposed. Beauvoir also left a legacy in literature. Her memoirs, Memoirs of a Dutiful Daughter, etc., provide a rich account of a woman carving out an intellectual life in early 20th century, and they inspired later women writers to use memoir as a form of feminist testimony. Her life itself, living as a liberated woman with a career, sexual freedom, not bound by marriage or children, was a model that growing numbers of women followed in the late 20th century. She showed it was possible to live life on one's own terms as a woman, something not many before her had so visibly done, especially in France. Beauvoir, whom may affectionately call La Beauvoir, is revered as an icon of women's emancipation. In summary, Simone de Beauvoir helped change the way the world thinks about women, not as mysterious feminine essence or mere auxiliaries to men, but as full human beings defined by their actions and choices. Her famous question, "What is a woman?" and her answer, "Anyone who identifies and lives as one, shaped by society's expectations," paved the way for all subsequent conversations about gender equality, from pay gaps to reproductive rights to hashtag MeToo. Beauvoir's work reminds us that the personal is profoundly political. How society treats women's bodies, women's work, women's minds, is a reflection of its core values. And as long as women are regarded as the second sex, true freedom and justice are unrealized for all. Thanks to Beauvoir's legacy, countless women and men have been inspired to continue the struggle to ensure that no one is relegated to second-class status on account of sex or any other accident of birth. As she wrote, "To be free is not just to cast off one's chains, but to live in a way that respects and enhances others' freedom," a principle that underpins not only feminism, but humanism at large.